Good morning, buddy. Happy Friday. I believe it was Fish on Friday on Tuesday, Jeffrey. You recall Fish on Friday on Tuesday this week when he literally said, he sent me a list of the things that he wanted to talk about. And one of them was, it said on this text, it said Helen. And I'm like, okay, we'll talk about Hurricane Helen. And he left off the E typo. And but literally that was the first I heard of Hurricane Helene. And now it is absolutely arrived with a vengeance, more than 2 million people without power, mostly in Florida, and a very, very dreary day here as well, has moved into Georgia. I'm sure most of you are, whatever, you're aware of what's happening here, and you've been watching on the Weather Channel or your favorite news channel. But yeah, it is as advertised. And I guess we'll call my absence here, my presence on the phone, a Helene-related absence. But I'll be doing the show, it appears, on the phone today. So there you go. Jeffrey, how have you fared through Helene?
I've not noticed it really, because we've had like sprinkling today, and it looks worse than it is, but you know, I didn't wake up in the middle of the night or anything. And,
no. Yes.
I haven't lost power or anything, something like that.
Yes. It's good we're not to the east and to the south. I did call my son Andrew, who's a student teacher now in Chattanooga, and asked if school was closed. School is, of course, closed because mostly fear of the storm. But he was like, "Yeah, it's raining." You know, so
exactly here.
Yeah. So, same thing here. So, anyway, that today on the radio show, we have a busy show. We got Jason Smith in the next segment, Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, and then Jeffrey's bets. Before I do anything else, Jeffrey, how are you feeling about the slate this weekend?
So weather's obviously a huge impact as we're discussing. Looking at my card, the theme is let's get gross.
Let's get gross.
Yeah.
How does gross apply to a betting scenario, Jeffrey?
Sometimes it will be the, you know, hey, everybody wants this over, let's go under. And it's a lot of how on earth could you take this team? And that's exactly why we're going to take this team.
We'll look forward to that. By the way, this is obviously we got Georgia Alabama this weekend, which is I think the headliner of all sports this weekend, don't you think? Even more than my beloved the Buffalo Bills playing the Ravens on Sunday, I think the headliner for all sports is Georgia Alabama. No,
I think you're right. I mean, it certainly seems to be the game that's garnering the most attention.
Here's the thing: this is the first time these two have played, obviously, in the new universe of a 12-team playoff, right? And one of the arguments that people would have for those who didn't want an expanded playoff, who either like the old, you know, the single championship game or the four-team BCS, was that a game like this would be rendered meaningless, and we wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much because the stakes would not be as high. I mean, let's be honest, Jeffrey, you can absolutely imagine that the team that loses this game could still be in the 12-team playoff, could you not?
I would actually argue probably likely.
Probably likely. So, curious question, does it make this game? Have you noticed that the conversation around this game is diminished by the fact that it appears we would wager that both of these teams are probably going to make the 12-team playoff?
So certainly from attention, no, but I do think in terms of stakes, yes.
Right, it definitely changes the stakes. There's no question, right? It changes the stakes because you can walk off that field having lost, right?
Yep.
And feel like, well, I'll get them next time. Right.
Yep.
I mean, you can,
well, we'll see you again.
But yes. So, but does that diminish the game? Does it make the game any? That the question is because the argument would have been, don't do this because then the games are no longer as pivotal. So does it take the fun out of the game? You know, I mean, it's very clear. Like, my beloved Buffalo Bills beat the hell out of the Kansas City Chiefs in the regular season, right?
Yep.
And in the end, that doesn't matter if you turn around and you lose to the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs. So it has unquestionably changed the stakes. My question is, has it changed the enjoyment? Will the ratings for this game be lower than an equivalent game in the previous, you know, non-12-team playoff world, you know? And I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, the one complication is typically when we see this game, it's the SEC championship game. And so that right. game's always going to get a monster rating versus a game in September.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why I said an equivalent yeah. game rather than this exact game, because this exact game would, in fact, be the SEC championship game, typically. Right, you're exactly right.
Or a playoff game or a championship game.
I haven't noticed, I guess is what I'm saying, is I haven't noticed any diminution of, you know what, you know, we see this every year. You know who almost every year makes the NCAA tournament? North Carolina and Duke, right?
That is
every
true.
Single year, no matter who wins those regular season matchups, both of those teams are usually going to the NCAA tournament. Does it ruin those? Does it seem to ruin those games among the Duke and North Carolina faithful? It does not seem to have that impact for me. I never needed the stakes to be life or death in order to enjoy a football game between two magnificent teams. And there are still some stakes, obviously, to this. It, easier path for the winner, among other things, and easier shot at a higher seed for the winner, among other things. So anyway, we'll talk about that.
I do agree with your point that I don't need those stakes, but I'm also not like giving them the Heisman either and like shoving them away. When you add those stakes on top of it, it adds like another delicious angle.
It did add an extra. Well, it takes some of the tension that you will now find in the playoff and fast forwards it into the regular
yes.
season, right? That's what it does. We're still going to get that tension. If that's what you wanted, that tension, you're still going to get that tension, that sense of, oh my God, it's life or death. It'll just be in a playoff game
yes.
instead.
It becomes like the NFL where, like, yes, to your point, when the Bills play the Chiefs in the regular season, it has tension, but it doesn't have the same tension like it did last January.
Right, exactly. All right. As I said, we got Jason Smith coming up next, then Chris Harrington, and then we will do your wagering weekend. I thought I'd start with Ed Scott, and we didn't cut this up. I just, you know, obviously Ed Scott spoke yesterday, and I've seen a lot of reaction to his words, and I have some things to say about his words, and I've seen a lot of video spliced and cut up and sound bites put out on social media. I don't know if we'll play the whole thing because it's 25 minutes, but I just thought there's something to be gained by hearing Ed Scott from the start talk about the decision to not go to, as he called it, the pack. And so for a little bit here, and I'll interrupt it at some point, but for a little bit here, we thought we'd start by just letting you hear from Ed Scott.
Hold on one second. Now we will hear from Ed Scott.
Thank you all for coming out. I just wanted to be able to spend some time with you. I know there are a lot of questions about the decision to not join the Pac-12, where we are with the American Athletic Conference. And I promised y'all during my press conference that I'd always be transparent as I can. And I figured that this would be a good way for us to be able to have some questions and answers. And instead of me putting out a statement, right? You did see a statement from the institution, but you didn't see a statement individually from me. And so I thought it was important that our constituents had a chance to hear from the athletic director. So I'm ready and willing to take whatever questions I can, and I'll be as transparent as I possibly can, given the fact that some of the information is obviously confidential because of negotiation. So with that being said, please ask it up.
Dr. Scott, what is the crux of the decision? What did this come down to? Reasons you stayed, reasons you didn't take that offer?
Yeah, I think it came down to three things. One is the business side of the decision. Two, as I'm learning, because I think most of you know now, I've been at Memphis for almost 60 days, right? So I'm still learning about the emotional scars that Memphis deal and being left out of some other conferences. And then I think lastly, it really came down to what our future looks like, right? And so those were the three buckets that we looked at. The financials were not there. Emotionally, I understand why people are upset. I read almost everything y'all put out, okay? I'll tell you that. I consume massive amounts of information on purpose because I'm still trying to learn. And so I know there are some people who feel a way and emotionally about the decision, but they don't know all the information. And then what does our future look like? And I think you'll see, hopefully, within about 5 to 6 years, almost all the major media rights deals are coming up. And I think that's really important that we need to be cognizant of that and what that landscape looks like in 5 to 6 years. And so those were the real reasons that we made the decision, because we looked at it, and, you know, from my perspective, in a three-pronged approach.
Did the American offer any incentive to stay whatsoever?
Well, this is why I wanted to talk to you. I want to address some of that. Everything is on the table with the American. So there is no deal for additional revenue at this time. But I've heard some of you report about the ESPN, and I want to look at you, Tim, when I say this. You didn't report this, but I'd like to address the people I'm talking to. I've heard some folks talk about the ESPN look-in. What I can tell you is I've seen enough of that contract, and specifically that look-in, where that money cannot go down. So any of you who are reporting that the money will go down during that look-in, it's actually an inaccurate reporting. And so I want to correct that for the record. The money can actually only go up in the American. As that look-in says. So there's nothing on the table now that tells us we're going to get more money. And I would also say, just contextually, you should see what the shares are of the new members, because some of them are getting more money than they expected, but they might not be getting as much money as Memphis, right? So no, to answer your question directly, but there's more context, because when there is inaccurate reporting, I want to make sure that I do correct that for our constituents so they understand.
Terry Dave Trossett, Defender. Where do you go from here?
Where do I go from here? I try to beat Middle Tennessee State on Saturday, right? I mean, no, I'm being honest with you, right? So I think this is one of the things that I'm learning about Memphis, is that a lot of folks, and some of you in the media, candidly, want us to go to be great, and sometimes you got to be great to go, right? And so when I hear people say, I'm not going to buy tickets, I'm not going to support the programs, you're not really hurting me. You're hurting the student athletes, right? And you're hurting the people that are on the field playing. And that's really, really important for me. So where does this go? If y'all haven't seen the latest reports of what's going on between the Mountain West and the Pac-6, 7 right now, this is a fluid situation, right? So that's the other thing. When we talk about the decision that was made by the University of Memphis to not join the Pac, as I like to call them right now at this time, that was not a binary decision. That was not a no, we're not ever going anywhere. That was based on the offer that was presented in front of us, that we're not taking that offer because we don't think less of ourselves. And I came here for a reason. You heard me in the press conference. You've heard me in any interview I've done. I'm bullish on Memphis's future. And so I think sometimes we get enamored by the new and we want to take a bad deal. And that deal was not a good deal for the University of Memphis. It certainly wasn't a good deal for our athletic department. And most importantly, it was a really, really bad deal for our Olympic sports.
Dr. Scott, Greg Gaston, Sports 56 Radio. The rumored amount of money that the Pac-12 was going to give you guys for an exit fee,
yeah,
which would have been, what, 2.5 is what was reported.
Yeah.
How truthful is that?
Accurate. Answer, it's a yes or no question, right? So
yes.
The answer is accurate. So here's the math, right? Let's talk about the math on this. I said the first prong was finances, right? So if we owe $25 million, which is precedent by SMU of what they did to get out, right? And yes, it can be negotiated. I heard what Gary said, and we can address that a little bit later. But if it's $25 million to get out, we're getting offered 2.5. That still leaves a gap of $22.5 million. Okay, if we're talking about a five-year deal, right, to get through 2031, right, if you start in 2026, that still leaves you $22.5 million that you got to pay back over 5 years, because if you're not in the pack and you go somewhere else, you're still paying the American back from getting out, right? And there's another piece of the deal without putting all of the information out there. Part of the deal was that two of the schools, and you can figure out who those were, would be able to keep all of the college football playoff annual distribution money, right? So Here's how I look at the math. If we're getting about $9 million right now from the American, and estimated between the consultants and our folks in-house, it was going to cost about $2.5 million because the offer was for all sports, not just football, men's and women's basketball, to be clear, it's going to cost us about another $2.5 million to travel, right? So to be whole, that's $11.5 million. If folks are speculating on the low end that this deal is around $12 million, that means we net a positive $500,000, right? And we still owe $22.5. So that means if I apply the net positive of a half a million to that number, we still owe $22 million, right? And that's not investing any additional money into our football, basketball, or other programs. Let's talk about travel for our Olympic sports before you ask about that, because a lot of folks are only talking about football and basketball. And I stood up here in the Lori Walton Center and told you I'm the AD for everybody, black, white, and everybody in between, and that includes our Olympic sports, right? So we've done the math on this. Travel-wise, it would be about 20,000 miles that our teams would have to travel in order to compete with the seven schools that are in there, okay? And that's if everything was a direct flight, and there's not a direct flight from Memphis to Corvallis or Memphis to Pullman, Washington. Do you know how far it is to go around the circumference of the Earth? Just under 25,000 miles. So we're going to take and put those young people on a commercial flight, right? And we're going to fly them that far to play a volleyball match that I watched against Wichita State last night, and my team who's here can correct me. It was maybe 2 hours long, and then we're going to fly them all the way back. I just don't think that was the right thing to do based on the finances we had. Now, if there was more money involved and we could charter them back so they can get back for class, right, they can recover better, that's a different conversation. And so I just think, I appreciate the question, because I think sometimes folks are just focusing on what they want to make their argument, and I had to look at all this, right? And so that's really how we looked at the finances in that situation.
Yeah, Coach Scott.
Yeah.
As you speak about travel, is the concern for fan traveling ever come across your guys' mind?
It did, but if I look at the message boards and all the stuff that was put out there, our fans want to travel because they want to see some of those locations and play against those teams, right? And they say they're more likely to buy tickets than when those teams come into our stadiums, right, into our arenas. My concern with that is what I said before. If you really care about Memphis, then you'd be supporting us now, right? And so I understand the emotional piece of that, but that did go into it. And there are some destinations that are important to our base. I've learned our people like New Orleans. They really like New Orleans. They also like Las Vegas, right? And so those things are important to me. You know, I want to make sure that as we're doing this, we do have to take into account what's important to the fans and to the city of Memphis, right? And that went into our calculus as well. It wasn't just financial. When I hear people say spreadsheets and, you know, it's easy to justify not making the financial move, yeah, that was really easy. But the other parts that went into it too, I don't think warranted us making the move at this time based on what we were being offered.
A couple things. Do you foresee the PAC revisiting, like re-engaging you guys?
Listen, they all have my phone number. I've heard from multiple of those ADs, they're consultants, and so if they call, I'm answering. I've never not answered a call when anyone from another school or another conference is called. So if they call, I'm going to listen. That's my job, and I'm glad you asked that, because here's something I really want to get out, and I need everybody to hear me loud and clear when I say this. We didn't say no to Memphis's future. We said no to a deal that we thought was bad. Right? So it's, again, it's not binary. It's not, well, we said no, so we're never going anywhere. I'm not waiting for a promise from Jim Phillips or Brett, right? I'm not waiting for that. What I am trying to do is be your athletic director, turn this into the very best department we can. We're a top 30 football, a top 30 basketball program right now, and we're willing to compete with anybody. But I'm not going to go all the way out to the West Coast, especially if we made the move ourselves, right, and nobody else followed us. And then we're going to go out there with one arm tied behind our back in a fist fight. And then if we don't win, what is going to be the commentary from you and from the fans and everybody else? Well, he set us up. He didn't put us in a position to be successful, right? So I get that, and which is why I'm in a leadership position. I had to make the tough decision. But I think that's really important that folks understand that part of it. We didn't say no to our future. We just said no to a deal that we didn't think was a good deal the day we got the deal, and we had a very short window to be able to accept that deal or not. Right. So when you ask about negotiation, because I think that's going to come up too, we didn't have much time to negotiate based on the timetable we were given from the PAC at that time.
Can you say how long you had?
This thing happened really fast. So, you know, hours. This was when hours like that. This was moving from when we officially got an offer to when they wanted us to render a decision.
Well, just the report. I was going to see if you could address the report that came out a day or two ago about you guys engaging the Big East. Was that something you guys did?
I'm engaging everybody. That's my job. right? Like, I'm making no bones about that, right? I did it at my press conference when we talked about realignment. If Val wants to talk from the Big East, I'd love to talk to her. I'll talk to Conference USA. I'll talk to everybody. I don't want to go backwards, but I need to answer phone calls because this is a relationship business. Now, in true candor, I know most of those folks, so I talk to them all the time anyway. It's not always about, hey, Memphis is looking for a home, right? Sometimes it's, hey, how are you doing? How are you dealing with this? How are your teams working with NIL in this space? Those kind of things. So I'm open, and I will listen. But what I'm not going to do is talk about offers we didn't have. The only official offer we had as an institution, to make it clear to everybody, was from the PAC at that time.
As this was going on, and including in those couple hours where you're making the decision, yeah, how closely were you talking with AD's officials from Tulane, USF, and UTSA?
Can I ask you a question in return? Did you guys get to ask me all the questions?
Sure.
Do you know where I was at that time?
You were in D.C.
So where was I? Lead one, with all the other FBS ADs in America, right? So there's about 80 of us. So the answer is obviously yes.
Well, the question is, were you going to make the decision together, or were you all making individual decisions?
That's not originally what you asked.
Okay, but now I've decided.
I told you, I'd like to have some fun with it. I love what I do, right? So that's why. You see what it's like when I pose it back to you.
Of course,
right?
Yeah. But you made me ask a better question.
There we go. So together we're going to get better, and I love that. And that's what I'm trying to do for Memphis, right? But no, to answer your question directly, it would have been tough to go it alone, but at the end of the day, I will, as long as that Dr. Hargrave and the board empowers me to make the best decision for the University of Memphis. It would have been tough to go it alone. I wouldn't have wanted to, but if the deal was good enough and we had to, we would have.
How much did uncertainty play a part? You addressed finances, but what about uncertainty over the media rights deal, over the playoff access specifically, and over who the other membership would be?
Well, there's no uncertainty about the playoff access, right? Because there is no automatic qualifier to the playoff except for the G5 right now and the A4, right? So let's just call that what it is. There's no uncertainty with that. I haven't heard Greg or Tony or anybody else come out and say they're, you know, if the PAC was reconstituted in any form, that they're going to give them an automatic qualifier. So as far as I'm concerned, there was no uncertainty there. That was very certain. All of the financials are speculative. There's not a media rights party. You guys are in the media. Who are they partnered with from a linear or a streaming standpoint? I don't know. And so, yeah, that does factor into it, because here's the worst thing that could have happened, right? I've heard some folks say, well, we're afraid to gamble, or other people have called me a coward, which I think is hysterical. I'm a lot of things, but that I'm not. And so when I look at it this way, we're going to take a leap of faith on something that could actually be a worse deal than we have now. And when I hear folks talk about the buyout and how others have figured that out, think about this. If you go to the Big 12 or you go to the ACC and you get half a share, that's still $17 to $20 million. That money, even in a speculative form, wasn't on the table for the University of Memphis, right? So it's a little bit easier to figure out when you know Fox is your partner, and if you go into that league, you're going to get a guaranteed amount of money, right? It's also easier to figure out if ESPN is your partner, and you're going to go into that league, and you're going to get a certain amount of money, right? So that did play a part into it. Here's the other thing you all haven't asked. How much does linear play into this? By my account, we'll have two ESPNU games this year, we'll have one ESPN2 game, and we'll have three ESPN games. That's six ESPN games linear, right? There's not a lot of G5s in the country getting that, which is part of the reason why our brand is so strong now, too. So there's value to that that's harder to quantify as well.
Do you see a long-term future in the AAC, just given some of the lack of, call what it is, lack of competition from some of the other schools, especially in regards to where you guys are in some of your younger sports?
Our aspiration is to compete at the highest level. And so I don't know if that's going to be the AAC, the ACC, the Big 12. That's why I said in the beginning, this is fluid for me. I said that in my initial press conference. I'm going to do what's best for Memphis and try to get us there. So what I'm trying to do, literally, because we just lost to Navy, we want to get back on the winning side. I'd like to get to 4-1. That's the focus. And I'm going to continue to evaluate the landscape as it moves forward. And that's also why I brought up in 2031 or 32, most of these media rights deals are up. We could see a format where the top football programs in the country are playing each other, right? The top 50. Right? Because of more of a federated approach, right? Because of TV, because you're going to usually see more regional Olympic sports, because not everyone wants to do what's going on in the Big Ten right now. Even some of the Big Ten folks don't want to do that and, you know, and traverse the country like that. So for me to give you an answer about that, I would be speculating. I don't want to do that. That's not fair.
We're going to cut him off now, Jeffrey. So there's an extended play version of Ed Scott and what he had to say. yesterday. What were your thoughts, Jeffrey, upon hearing it?
I think that you were 100% right that talking was the right move. And I think that he clearly demonstrated, I think we heard from we heard the more informed version of what the Cliff Notes would read, which is Memphis didn't take this deal because it was a bad deal. But we started to get a better picture of just how bad of a deal it was.
Yeah. I've said this from the beginning, since we first started, literally from the time Ed Scott gave his first introductory press conference to then when he appeared on this show, and then again yesterday, the guy's a really good communicator. Occasionally seems a little full of himself, but he's a really good communicator. Indeed, I would say, we have other communicators. We had Will Plank on from the marching band, and there's Arm Gazuzian, who's a great. I'm talking about in the universe of communicating to us about what's happening in the world of sports. I think he is the most effective communicator right now at the university. The president's fine, but not particularly electric. Ryan is fine, but not particularly electric. Penny was a tremendous communicator when he wanted to be, but he doesn't want to be as much now. Like fine, he's focused on the job, he's feeling embattled, whatever else. Ed Scott is a tremendous communicator and does a great job. You hear him and you feel better, right? And one reason that's true is he gives you enough detail that the whole thing has some way. A, you have a sense of confidence that he's grasping the details, and B, you don't think you've been blowing smoke at you. You know, he tells you things, and he has from the start. And so I appreciate that. Among the things he said were basically he went through the math, and the math was basically they're going to be on the hook for a $22.5 million entrance fee, as they did the math around TV and travel and everything else. And this is even assuming that the projections for TV were correct from the PAC. And that was the one I did like that. He called them the PAC, which is why a
PAC six
number,
or seven, whatever it is.
Number. That was like a great subtle, well, I'm going to call them the PAC. Another, again, effective communicating. But even assuming that the projections are correct, they would be $500,000 to the good, but then they'd have this $22.5 million that they'd have to pay over a five-year period. And to get what? To get this is the way they viewed it, I think, a greater Mountain West, right, basically, and if you look at the Olympic sports and the travel, and we talk about all the time, and I don't think Olympic sports drive almost anything, right? I think they're used as a human shield.
100%. Thank you.
When you want to talk about, when you start talking about, we care about our Olympic sports, it that fits what you want to do. So now you can talk about how much you care about the volleyball.
Well, all you have to do is look at Stanford, because Stanford is one of the schools that loves to promote how much the Olympic sports
matter. No one cares more about Olympic sports than Stanford, and they're in the ACC.
Correct.
Now, this is true, though. A difference between Stanford and Memphis is, have you ever tried to fly anywhere out of Memphis other than New York? It takes a full day.
Yeah.
Because you have to connect. So he said this later, and you didn't hear this, but if they had more money and they could charter, that would make a difference. But when you're sending your volleyball team to
he said that. He did. We heard him say a two-hour volleyball game.
I heard that 2-hour volleyball game. I didn't hear even he said the charter part when we were listening to this part. If we had money to charter, we could charter them. Anyway, so basically 100% confirming the problem here was the exit fee, right? That was the problem. Fundamental problem here was the exit fee.
No question.
And later on, I don't think we heard this part just now. I'm confusing what I heard yesterday when I heard the whole thing. And now he also talked about donor fatigue. He said, listen, they're still trying to raise the other 20 and 25 million for the football stadium, right? In order to unlock the Smith family gift. So we haven't raised that 25 million yet. Now we got to go raise this 22.5 million, basically saying we don't have it. Like, it's essentially saying we don't have the money. Really saying we don't have the money. And And he also said some things along the way that were interesting that sort of cut the other way, kind of remarkable. He said, but I credit the transparency. Did you get anything out of this from the AAC in terms of staying in the AAC? We know that UNLV got a lot out of it, staying in the Mountain West. We know that Air Force got a lot out of it, staying in the Mountain West. Did you get anything? And to that he said, the look-in clause doesn't, like, he didn't want to answer the question. That's when he immediately went on attack, because the answer is no, they got nothing. They literally got nothing.
Yeah.
But at least he said that, you know. And then he said, but what do you know? Well, a lot of you don't know, misreporting, is that the ESPN look-in clause in 2 years doesn't let the thing go down. So he didn't really, there was not a good answer to that question, because they got nothing. And so he bobbed and weaved a little on that one. He also said, I thought this was nice, he said, someone asked him, does the fact that there was a 5-year grant in rights, you had to waive your, give him your TV rights for 5 years, was that one of the reasons you hesitated? Because who knows, in the next 5 years, you might be invited to the Big 12 or the AAC. He said, no, not at all. He said, we like 5 years. And I do think, by the way, that should give you a time frame of what they're looking at now. They don't think anything's going to happen in the next 5 years. You know, he keeps talking about 2032 or whenever everyone's TV rights are up. What I admired most was his energy, his transparency, the way he answered every question. He said, I listen to everything. I read everything. That's unusual to say that. He's obviously trying to, immerse himself in this community. I think he's a remarkably effective communicator. And I think most Memphis fans who heard it, who heard snippets of it yesterday, and who heard the gist of it today, should feel better about it. And I feel better about it. And I was not ripping it to begin with. I've been in the place of, listen, I don't feel like I can say they absolutely should have done it, but man, it sure does highlight what a crappy situation they're in. That's been my view. The few things that I quibbled with there, if I was to quibble, one, I didn't particularly like it when he said a lot of our fans seem to want to go to be great instead of being great to go. I just don't think he should at all sort of take shots at Memphis. It wasn't a shot exactly, but it was kind of like, it was, I'm hearing from a lot of fans who are unhappy, who are threatening to buy these tickets, and I don't know if they're real fans. Memphis fans have been supporting this team for decades and decades and decades, honestly, at a level often above which is deserved. And they have gone through disappointment on the realignment front, disappointment, 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 disappointment. So if people have a emotional reaction to this past 2 weeks, it's entirely understandable, and not to be dismissed, or you're not to have your fandom questioned because you found this to be a difficult 2 weeks, to be left where you're left. So I didn't particularly like that. Another time he said, did you counter? And he said, we didn't have time to counter. I found that to be absolutely disingenuous. How long does it take to say, if in fact the problem was the exit fee, how long does it take to say, we'll come if you pay $17 million of the exit fee? I just said it in 15 seconds, right? So I don't know how long the stumbling block here was the $22.5 million. Now, maybe they would have said no, but it seems to me that you could at least say, hey, PAC, $2.5 million is not adequate. You will pay the exit fee for us, or we will, like, what is the harm in countering? I think it sort of betrayed the fact that they really didn't want to go, period, right, for all the travel reasons or whatever other reasons or whatnot. But I really don't understand why you wouldn't counter, even if you're given 4 hours, whatever. Like, hey, they've been talking about it for more than 4 hours. Maybe the final offer came when it came. But of course you can counter. I found that to be utterly.
I view that as semantics. I imagine that the piece of paper they got was the quote unquote final offer. I think they had been negotiating for a while.
Well, then he should have said that. We did. Yeah. That's fine. Then that's we fair. Did counter. Like, I mean, then the right answer is we've been countering for 4 days. You know, we've been I think you're probably right. But
the way they behaved
wasn't wrong. Then the way he answered the question was wrong, right? Like, then tell us, yes, we countered, and they didn't want to lower the fee. But I just then he misspoke, I guess, is what I would say. And then the other thing is, if you want to argue the merits of it, and I don't particularly, anyone who has left a conference, like when SMU left to go to the ACC, you know what you would say that was? If you wanted to not pay that money, if you didn't want to put yourself in a position that SMU isn't getting TV money for 9 years, I think it is, right? No TV money for 9 years.
It's at least 7.
Yeah, and they're forgoing the 7 to 9 million or whatever it is that they'd be getting from the AA.
And they had to make a commitment to spend right. as if they were
right. So they had to spend
right.
So you could absolutely imagine an AD in the wake of that standing up just as Ed Scott did yesterday and said, "Listen, SMU fans, we aspire to greatness, but we respect ourselves too much to take that bad deal. That's a bad deal." And it is a bad deal. I mean, if you look at it. So I think the argument for those who still think they should have gone would be, sure, it was a bad deal. Of course it was a bad deal. That's what's going to happen. You're going to get, you know what? And if you want to buy an expansion franchise in the NFL or the NHL or the NBA,
you're going to get a bad deal.
You're going to get a bad deal. But you do it because it's the only deal you're ever going to get. And because the current reality sucks. The biggest problem with what happened yesterday was, all that may be true, look at the basketball schedule. Look at the basketball schedule. Tell me, is there a single game from January 1 on that is of any interest to you? No. Look at the home football schedule. And that's what you are stuck with. Like, he was dynamic, he was transparent, he was all those things. And I applaud that, and I applaud his willingness to engage and to answer questions, and I think he should continue to be out there because I think he is the most effective communicator. I think Ed Scott is one of the reasons for hope here, although he said, "I don't love hope, I like to earn it," and that's fine, earn it, Ed. But I think he's an incredibly effective communicator, but I think the reality is the reality. And you're now in a situation, he's talking about 2032, you're in a situation where you are going to continue leeching away fans, not because they're mad over this, but because they're not interested in that pathetic basketball schedule. And so how many fans will be left by the time 2022 roll around? You know, the trajectory is, just look at the numbers. Look at what has happened to Memphis football. And Ed just talked openly about the fact that ticket sales are down. And this was heading into the most anticipated Memphis football season forever, I was told. And yet they can't draw 27,000. They haven't hit yet. So that's the problem with some of the things that he said. But that's just the reality. I think he did a really good job explaining himself yesterday, a really good job, and a really good job of sounding energetic and determined and all of that. He still was limited by the fact that the reality is the reality.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing I've been struggling with all week is something hasn't sat right with me about all of this, and I think what I've stumbled on is I really think that there's a ton of anger and it's all misplaced. And I think a lot of this should be directed at Oregon State and Washington State, who are not accepting reality. And right. Basically they're keeping all the money. And basically what they're saying is, like, you should come and be in a league with us. Well, congratulations. You're getting Sacramento State. Suck it.
I agree with that. Like, I 100% agree with that, that they created this. 2 weeks ago, Memphis fans were just rolling along, you know, disappointed with whatever they were disappointed in, excited about whatever they were excited about, and they didn't ask for this.
Right.
And then here comes Washington State and Oregon with a offer, and you heard, another detail that Ed shared was they they're going to keep all the, you know, they're going to keep the playoff money.
Yes.
The football playoff money. So, and they're, yes, they're not, they're coming with a pathetic offer for the exit fee. They're keeping the playoff money. And then people are mad at Memphis.
Yeah. That's what's not sat right with me.
I think that's right. And I think it's, and I do think broadly speaking, nationally, there has been a recognition of that, that it's a clown show out there. And I think that's why it was so effective to call it the Pack. And you see them now scrambling for, you know, whoever they can get. And so I agree with that as well. Memphis is in many ways the victim here of being dragged into something that they weren't looking for. And now, you know, a sense of discouragement has settled over parts of the fan base. And they already had a sort of an uphill climb. I will remind people, if they want to be supportive of this university and supportive of the athletic program, one thing they could do is buy tickets to the St. Jude basketball doubleheader. All the money is going to St. Jude. You'll be able to see the men play North Carolina and the women play South Carolina. And that's a chance to actually try to build something, to bring a regular season tournament, which will bring quality basketball games to FedEx Forum, which is where we say we're lacking going forward. All right, we're late to get to Jason Smith, Chris Harrington after that, then Jeffrey's bets. Before that, I will tell you, a lot of local teams are flying high, and if you want to wear their collegiate colors, it's fall now. It's officially fall here. So in addition to the sports shirts that you can buy in official collegiate colors over at O'Call, you can buy quarter zips and hoodies as well. If you want to wear your Tennessee colors or your Alabama colors or your Ole Miss colors or your Memphis colors or your Arkansas colors, head on in to O'Call. It's not like a big garish insignia stuff. It's just in the classic collegiate colors, quarter zips, hoodies. Plus, by the way, it's custom clothing week at O'Call. So if this would be a great, no better time to go in, and if you need to upgrade your wardrobe with a new sport coat or a suit, you could do that at O'Call as well. Head on in this weekend. We're going to take a break. Jason Smith, when we return, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Jason Smith, Jason and John, every single day from 11 until 2. A little late to get to Jason because I wanted to, let's be honest, Jason, I took some of your time. I gave it to Ed Scott so people could hear from him for himself. I will be glad. I feel like next week we'll be totally done talking about this. We'll move on. We'll put all this to bed. But since Ed Scott talked yesterday, this is sort of the last spasm of conversation, it feels like, about this. What did you – I presume you've heard most of his remarks. What struck you?
I thought he was I talked about this with Jeffrey yesterday. I didn't think he had a tough job yesterday, but I did think he brought more to the table than I expected. I thought yesterday was just a job of basically talking common sense to the Memphis fans. And sure, you know, many of us felt like Ed owed the fans talk at some point, and he comes out, does that, obliges, rightfully so. I think it was time, whether you want to paint a vision or address specifics. And I think he addressed a lot more in terms of specifics than I thought he would. And so I thought he did a good job of hitting common sense things that I didn't think were going to be so tough, then giving us some extra in terms of, he confirmed the $2.5 million, so much so that I wonder, was he the guy that fed Dellinger the number because he was willing to do it on the record? That's key. Because, Jeff, most of the conversation should stop right there. We can ask the question about whether Memphis should have gone back and asked for more in a counter. Ed sort of addressed that. We didn't have time. That was that did raise an eyebrow with me. But, frankly, what the Pac-12 should have realized very early on was that was a disrespectful offer. But back to the point, $2.5 million, if you're confirming that publicly, it shuts down everything. He said it'd be $500,000 that they'd have. We talked about this being a math problem. $500,000 that they'd have after everything was done, and you've still got to address the $22.5 million. He literally spoke in the same numbers we were using after Dellinger says that the offer was just $2.5 million to pay exit fees. It was a bad deal, and so that was the common sense part. What I think is the tougher part for Ed right now, and you discussed it. I mean, you just hit on it there at the end after he got off. Is, well, now you got to go sell tickets. right? And whether that's basketball, whether it's football, in a conference nobody wants to be in, we all acknowledge that. That's the tougher job here, is to paint this vision where you're not going to be going anywhere, but you're going to make it, you know, it's going to be better. And we've talked about that on our show. The only way you can do that is to make the programs that you have better. And I know there was that statement about, you know, he was speaking sort of directly to fans about, you know, you got to be good to go. I don't have it right in front of me, but I sort of hooked in on that a different way, in the sense that, and I said it on our show, it's been since 2019 that you've won an AAC football title. You've never won a regular season AAC basketball title. Yes, 2023, Penny beats a good Houston team to get the conference tournament title, but the point is, there's room for improvement right here. You've built up equity in the sense that from a brand standpoint, you've got Dellinger and others, and he's saying most of college athletics realizing that, saying that, acknowledging that you are the best thing in the group of five right now. So build on that. Improve the programs you have, which is essentially all you can do when somebody's hitting you with a bad offer, which you would have at this point. I mean, my gosh, how do you explain to those, you know, those Olympic sports players what you're doing in terms of putting them on those commercial flights, can't get them back like he explained, and that this is the right thing for them? When frankly, we don't even know, you know, the TV deal's not set down, you don't have that. And so I thought, you know, he did a good job of explaining some very common sense things, but then giving us a little bit more in terms of, you know what? Yeah, not just was this a bad deal. Again, it was disrespectful in the sense that you think you can get the top three schools out of the AAC for $7.5 million. Like, come on, man, it's ridiculous. And look at them now. Look at the thing now. And I, this is where he's saying, man, I thought of the fact that he just called him the Pack. This is where you can hit him back a little bit. I didn't mind that.
Because I thought it was a great thing.
I looked at the offer from the pack, from the Pack, not even the 12, not even the 8 right now. I look at that offer as disrespectful. And I think in sort of his answer back in that, I mean, we're not even addressed them. They don't even have a number right now. You can, because that is the tone, Jeff, of that offer. Yeah, you can go back and say, well, we deserve 17. Hell, we deserve for you to pay the whole damn thing like you're doing for the other schools. You can do that. But frankly, in not acknowledging it, I would assume that Tulane and USF saw it as the same thing, then they get the picture. I mean, that thing, it shut it down. I think once we saw that number, it shuts down the whole, well, could this have still been a good deal? Could you have gone out on faith? No, not with $2.5 million in exit fees. Not Memphis. So I thought he did a pretty good job yesterday.
I'll take exception to the idea. I'm sure that there are those who will not feel like it shuts down. And I understand that's your perspective, that it's the answer to everything. But what I like particularly is the way you have spun it, because I think you're dead on. Because, all right, fine. The decision's done. It's over. And I'm whatever. They made it. I think you're right. Now focusing on the future, what did he have to say about the future? And the phrase was, he said, a lot of Memphis fans want to go to be great. I think you got to be great to go. And honestly, I kind of resented that, because I think he meant that as he was pointing the finger at Memphis fans. He was saying, I think the way you've spun it is right, which is, they have to be great. I'll tell you this, that it may be not an ideal conference, but you know what? It wasn't an ideal conference when John Calipari was running through it, and it was a lot of fun. And whatever the football, whatever the attendance is going to be this weekend, it would be a hell of a lot better if they'd beaten Navy as opposed to lost to Navy. So in terms of being great to go, I think you're right to put the onus on those programs. They haven't dominated. They haven't been to a conference championship football game, and they haven't dominated. They were second fiddle to Houston. Houston leaves. They're second fiddle to Florida Atlantic, and then they collapse. I think you're right to put the focus on they have to be great to go. And you know what? As limited as the conference is, if you're running through it, winning's fun.
Listen, we would have been all right to go if the freaking deal had been better. if the deal from the Pac-12 is better, if they're paying $17 million to $20 million of the exit fees, we're out as we are. You got to be good to go and have a good deal. That was a bad deal. And, yes, now that there is no more movement, yes, we focus on let's be good when it's time to go. It gets depressing when you're talking about if that's ever going to happen in 6 years or, as he pointed out, when these media rights deals are up. I didn't see it, Jeff, as much of a you know, kind of a veiled shot at Tigers fans as much as I saw it as we can improve our own thing. He did point out, too, and I'm sure some of them were calling themselves Tigers fans, that were calling him a coward for not going, for not taking what was clearly laid out as cleanly as he could do it, a bad deal. And he was called a coward by some of those. Now, some of us with thin skin would probably take that personally. And no, when you've been an AD, you can't. But my point is, him saying that yesterday, I didn't think that was as much of a shot back or, you know, anything else. I mean, I'm sure it sounded like he
took it was in response.
Shot.
He said a lot of our fans. He said a lot of our fans think we should whatever, but we got to, you know. And he was talking about it in the context of buying season tickets.
Right. He's telling the absolute truth. I mean, you're doing damage to the program when you decide that, and especially when you do it because you're not going to take a bad deal. Like, all that is the truth. It's not a shot back. It's maybe something that we need to hear. He didn't come across in the Tubby Smith way, we're fifth and we're going to stay fifth because I said so. He comes across as aspirational and a man who's going to get the best deal for Memphis. So I thought he was great yesterday.
Yeah, we agree on that. I thought he was really good. What's one of the interesting things is that, and I think this is for me the most remarkable thing about this 2 weeks, is the emotion that people have had about it on either side of it. And as Jeffrey said, that's the fault of Washington State and Oregon State. But it also, what does, and I, if people say, I'm done, I want to sell my season tickets, what I think that is, I think it's people just, they're just sick of it. You know, it's been 30 years of being left out. And I think there is an emotional quality to all of this that is really striking. I mean, you know, we could see it in our exchange. We could see it in every time anyone on different sides of this talks about it, you hear that emotion coming out. I guess the good part is it does reflect that how deeply this stuff matters in Memphis, right? Like, if people care about this stuff, which is still, in the end, if you're looking for me, to me to say for hope of the future, it's how much everyone seems to care about this stuff, which is good, right?
Well, I mean, that's what Ed's got going for him. And again, I would tell you, you were doing a lot better in terms of season tickets and where you were from a football standpoint in 2019. Yes, in a better conference, a better AAC, but it was still, you were competing for championships. So let's get back to that. That's right. Why the onus right now is for Ed Scott to look at Ryan Silverfield, who's never been to an AAC title game, and at Penny Hardaway right now and say, guys, you know, we can say we're the best thing in the AAC, and we can, from a resource standpoint, we can claim that now. But we ain't doing it from a you know, on the court and an on the field standpoint. And so right now, again, you look inward. I hope he will hold them sort of to that. Now with Ryan, again, he's got a new contract, an extension, and so you're in a spot with him. Ed comes in, but Ryan's got the contract and sort of the leverage. Ryan wins 8, 9, 10 games. Can you really fire a guy if he's doing that and yet not, you know, not winning an AAC title? So that one's, and then with Penny, what are we talking about here? We know the importance of getting butts back in seats down there. And so for Ed, okay, it's looking at those two and saying, this is where we can be better. As I said on our show, right now, Memphis is a soccer school. Frankly, it's a women's soccer school. It is.
Yeah.
If you want to be real about yourself, that's what you are. And again, Ryan Silverfield, you've got everything you need. You know, you get off to a bad start, losing what's supposed to be your easiest road game in the AAC to Navy. You know, go out and run the table like they're supposed to and get to an AAC title game. That's what you say if you're Ed Scott.
Great stuff, Jason. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yes,
we'll
sir.
Talk to you again next week. Yep. Jason Smith. They're on every single day from 11 to 2. We're late to get to Chris Harrington. I'm stranded, so I'm out of studio, so I'm going to let Jeffrey talk to Chris. And I'll be back for Jeffrey's Bets. We've got a busy second hour. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we welcome Chris Harrington to the program. Let's fire it up. Chris Arrington joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Bell Bottoms by John Spencer Blues Explosion, a band that was heavy rotation on my college radio station back in the day. Set to headline tonight's Gonerfest lineup down at Rail Garden. Not sure how the weather will impact that, but Gonerfest happened this weekend, and John Spencer was supposed to cap things off tonight.
So right now, it's one of those things where the skies look worse than reality is. Like, it's like, honestly, like the thing I would compare it to is it feels like right now it's like rain in Seattle, where everyone always talks about, like, it's rain, it's gloomy. It's like, if you've ever been there, it's like, it's kind of like a light rain. Like, it's not the what we're used to, which is like just the, you know, the raindrops that are heavy and big.
In Seattle, the air is wet.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Great way to phrase it. Wanted to get to a couple of things. We'll get to the Grizzlies in just a moment. But ESPN yesterday, I believe Andrew Marchand of the Athletic had the report that ESPN is laying off Zach Lowe, and the primary cause is he had reportedly a seven figure salary. I know you don't particularly care about who's where media wise, but what does it say to you right now that ESPN's entire NBA coverage, because they are the NBA's number one media partner, what does it say to you that they're kind of like in flux?
Yeah, I mean, I do care about this. I'm a big fan of Zach's work and have been since back before he was, I mean, when he was writing for Sports Illustrated or whatever, CNN, SI, yeah, back in the day. And I'm acquainted with him. I have not communicated with him recently, but I am acquainted with Zach. He's been good to me. I've been on his pod. He's been on mine when I was at the Commercial Appeal. And so I hate to see it. I hope he pops up somewhere else doing the same stuff. I don't know if that's what he will want to do. For me personally, as a consumer of NBA media, that's a big hit for ESPN in terms of my interest in it. But I don't know that it's, you know, people are going to kill it, and I am too, in terms of what I care about. But I don't know from their perspective whether that's a good move or a bad move in terms of what they want to do. It seems to me, given the report, and I hate sort of talking about, you know, someone else's salary, although we do it with players all the time, right?
Yeah, it is. It is fascinating how it's like we kind of get uncomfortable when we talk about like our field salaries. But yes, we will rip the fact that Dak Prescott's the number one paid player in the NFL.
It almost feels like, given that aspect of the report, ESPN sort of built him up to the point where they felt like they had to like get rid of him. You know, I mean, and he started as a writer, he was a blogger back in the day. But he started doing TV, the podcast takes off, suddenly he becomes like an ESPN personality, not just a writer for the website, and that elevates, you know, that salary range into something that I think is unusual for writers, you know? And then that gets to the point where ESPN, you know, the bean counters look at it, and I guess they make that decision. One of the things I like about Zach, I think a lot, it was interesting looking at the social media reaction. It was more about the podcast than the writing.
Yeah.
That's where things are going. But what I appreciate about Zach is he never stopped caring about the writing. Even as he got into TV, even as the podcast took off, he would still write the same quality, the same depth, and it seemed like he really cared about the writing on its own terms. And I'm sort of speaking for him a little bit, but this is the sense I got. It seemed to me like he saw the writing as sort of the foundation for the other stuff he was doing. That is where he figured stuff out, and he was able to speak, you know, with the depth he did because he had done the work that went into the writing. And so I really appreciate that about him, and I hope he keeps doing all the stuff he did at ESPN somewhere else, but that remains to be seen. But I mean, it's true that what is valued in the marketplace is more, it seems to be more, you know, what can be a quick YouTube clip, what can be a TV hit, that kind of stuff. And I am not, that is not where my attention goes, but like, you know, that's me. I don't expect media companies to design their content for me, you know?
Yeah, it seems to me there's no question that they want clips that kind of essentially generate conversation, whether it be through the media or whether it be through the masses or for themselves. Like, you know, it becomes talking points for themselves. But like, to me, the thing that I think you're spot on about, so many people that get to Zach's spot where they go from being, like you said, a blogger to a on-camera personality on their biggest events, they get away from writing, and yet he continued to write. And like we think with like Bill Simmons, like, you know, I mean, does Bill even
write?
I don't even think he writes like even like the trade column anymore. I think he literally doesn't even write.
No. I mean, he jokes about it. He listens to his pod. It's like, my fingers don't work anymore, you know? Yeah, he's like, you know, to your point about the trade thing, like he's tried to relaunch that and then it just falls through because it seems like he doesn't want to put the work into it, you know? And I used to love those Bill Simmons trade columns. I would read, those things would probably be 30,000 words. I'd read the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, it is just kind of interesting because they lose, to me, you know, a huge part of their conversation is the transactional part. And I'm sure they think with, you know, okay, maybe we don't get someone as good as Woj, but we will get someone else. And we are still the NBA's partner and whatnot. And so, I don't know. I kind of thought it's interesting that that with the emphasis that they put on the NBA, it feels like almost their entire like NBA non-analyst wing is just kind of in flux.
Right.
Wanted to get to a couple of Grizzlies things because, as you and Jeff talked about yesterday, we had the projections column, or we had the projections piece from ESPN from Kevin Pelton's computer, as Kevin would say. We also had the future power rankings. But I was kind of thinking about this. Other than Oklahoma City, who do you feel like, if you had to say this team got better in the West this year, who do you think would qualify?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm not thinking about it. I'm sort of going through a lot of this right now, and I'm not thinking about it necessarily in terms of who got better, but I am thinking about who I think is going to be good, you know, who I think is going to be, you know, relative after OKC in the regular season. I think Dallas got better at the trade deadline last year. And I think, so when you look year to year, that's sort of the comp. I think they're bringing a better team into this season than they brought into last season. Are they bringing a better team into this season than they took out of last season? That's more debatable to me. That may be more lateral, but maybe it is a little better. You know, maybe the Klay Thompson, Najee Marshall for Derek Jones Jr., Tim Hardaway, maybe that is an upgrade. But I think they'd already upgraded pretty significantly in the deadline. So I think Dallas going into this season is in better shape than they were going into last season. I mean, the Grizzlies got better just because of getting healthy. You know, there's that. I think the Nuggets have gotten worse. Minnesota's an interesting question because it's mostly the same team, but they're really dependent on Mike Conley. He's another year older. And I think their depth, it's sort of like the Denver thing. Their depth is slowly being chipped away. And so it seems like a small thing when you go from Kyle Anderson to Joe Ingles.
Yeah.
But, like, that's a meaningful downgrade to me because that's like your seventh man. I don't know if Joe Ingles can play anymore. And then they're depending on some rookies, you know, Rob Dillingham and Terrence Shannon. They're getting an awful lot like Denver, where the top five or six players is really strong, and the rest of the roster is really shaky and really unproven. It's a lot of mixture of raw and cooked. So I worry about Minnesota a little bit in terms of their ability to withstand injury. I think the Suns are probably better because of the coaching change and because of you have real point guards, you know, Tyus Jones now. But Kevin Durant played like 70 games last season. Is he going to do that again?
Well, I mean, and how many games is, you know, how many games is Booker and Beal going to play?
Right.
I just
don't think Beal's that good anymore. So I'm not that worried about the Beal thing.
I never thought he was that good to begin with.
Yeah, but if they get 70 games, you know, each from like Booker and Durant, and then like, you know, better coaching and a real point guard, and like that team could be better. So I think the West, you know, I think the West is deep with good teams. But the Thunder are the only one that feels like a dead lock, you know, to be in that mid-50s range win-wise.
How surprised would you be if they don't wind up as the one seed?
I mean, you know, you got 15 teams, only one can be the one seed.
Right.
So it shouldn't be a shock if they're not there. But I think they're a fairly strong favorite in the regular season. You know, they did it last year, and then I didn't mention in terms of teams that got better. I mean, they finished first in the West, and then they added Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein. So they're the obvious team that got better. And given the youth of the roster, given that there's not a lot of you know, injury history to be super concerned about on that roster. And given the depth that they now have, I think they are really set up to be a big-time regular season team. I think the playoffs is a different question. I think they could easily come out of the West to be in the finals, but I'm more certain about them as a regular season team, you know, maybe a juggernaut.
I suppose I should have realized this, but, you know, when the Grizzlies were so bad early, it was kind of like I'll pay attention to the rest of the NBA when the playoffs. Like, I reverted back to, like, casual fan, other than just kind of having games on. I think maybe it's because Towns is so high profile, but I did not realize the amount of injury luck that the Timberwolves had. But then I started thinking, Ant's probably pretty durable. Mike has been very durable, despite being undersized. I mean, Mike has been, you know, he's had injuries, but he has been, considering the amount of minutes and the amount that he plays, like, he's been pretty durable. And then I started thinking about it in comparison with the Grizzlies. Like, how do you balance the difference between injury luck and injury prone?
Well, there's a pattern with Morant missing games, and I'm not talking about suspension, right?
I've done this on the show where it's like you go through, it's like I set aside last year, but he did get hurt also on top of being suspended. But, I mean, his first 2 years he had pretty good health, but other than that, I don't think he's cracked, was it 65 games? I don't think he's cracked
So the pattern with Ja misses games. There's going to be a point where there's a pattern with Desmond Bane missing games for different reasons, right? Now, with Jared has had a couple of significant injuries, the knee thing and the foot thing. But I felt like there's less of a pattern with him, you know, little stuff, you know? I mean, when he has not had the major injuries, he's tended to play, you know, 70 games or whatever, non-tanking, you know, situations he could play more. I think there's less of a ongoing thing with him, but he has had a couple of significant injuries. And Marcus Smart is a guy I think you can't depend on. You can't pencil in 65 games from Marcus Smart. Hopefully you can get more than 50, you know, but you can't assume, you know, he's going to play. He's going to be there every night. And some of the other guys, who knows? I mean, G.G. Jackson has an injury. There's no real history there. He's too young to have a history, really, but he has an injury now. Edie was super durable throughout college. I think people overreacted to the ankle sprain stuff in summer league because people had the jitters about Grizzlies' injuries.
Yes.
But, like, his history is of being super durable. We'll see about that. But I think I think the focus has to be on John Dez and how many games you're really going to get from those guys.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, like, that's whenever anyone asks, like, what do you think about the Grizzlies? It almost feels like the first question I want to ask is, how many games does Ja play? I mean, right? Isn't that kind of where you would start?
Yeah. No. Yeah, definitely. Because it's not – one of the real questions I think the team is going to have is how do they play and how well do they play without Ja? Because even when he plays, he's not playing 48 minutes. So this is like an every night question for them. And, you know, Derrick Rose was not the answer to that, but Derrick Rose's exit – sort of underscores it even more. You know, is Scottie Pippen going to move up and be an every night backup point guard the way Tyus Jones was? Do you feel like, you know, you can get by without that and get more minutes from Kennard Williams, those guys? That's a real thing for them to try to sort out, I think, you know, in training camp and preseason.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was thinking about it in these terms. They're obviously different players, but do you think that it is realistic to believe that Scottie Pippen could be as productive as a backup point guard as Tyus Jones was?
I think differently productive, but yes, I think it's possible. I think that is a high end outcome. You know, Tyus Jones is, you know, somewhere between, like, you know, the 22nd and 35th best point guard in basketball. It's that kind of thing. I think the high end outcome with Scottie Pippen is probably something like that. I don't think that's the most likely outcome. The most likely outcome is a level below that. But there are people who are not Grizzlies fans who have watched him and said, you know, this guy, maybe he could end up being a starter at some point, you know, because his on-ball defense looks like it has a chance to be, like better than Tyus Jones, like very, very high-level on-ball defender in the backcourt. And if he improves, you know, he's quick enough to get in the lane. If he improves as a playmaker and shooter a little bit, I think there is potential there for him to be you know, as effective but differently effective as Tyus Jones was as a backup. I don't think that's guaranteed by any stretch, but I do think that's in the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I think the thing that surprised me, and because I watched him at Vanderbilt, in the NBA, he has looked more athletic. And I think maybe I had the assumption like, okay, his limitation was going to be athleticism, but I think he's been athletic enough. I think we're just realizing that, you know, the knock on him was size, and like that's a knock on a lot of guys. But I think I've been impressed that he seems to be more athletic, and I don't think it's unrealistic to think that he could, you know, contribute defensively as well.
Yeah, no, I think he may be a defense-first player, really,
yeah,
which makes him a different kind of player than Tyus. So to me, the question is, the shooting, where is it going to settle? And is he going to be – he's not going to be a Ja Morant playmaker or a Tyus Jones playmaker. But he showed some stuff in summer league in terms of, like, just playing some basic pick and roll, making basic plays, getting in the lane, you know, do enough to as a backup point guard to get the offense going.
How much confidence do you have that there'll be – you know, I think they typically under every year under Taylor, they've settled somewhere in the top 10 defensively. How much confidence do you have that they'll still be that?
I feel pretty good about that. Again, like, tell me how many games you're getting from, I think, and here it's
Jaren.
It's Jaren, Marcus, Vince. Those, to me, that's the foundation of your defense, is those three guys.
Yeah.
And then there's the Zach Edey question. Because it's extreme, right? He's going to help you on the defensive boards. He's going to help box guys out. He's going to help take up space and let Jaren roam. But is he going to be susceptible when you pull him out? And so is Edey going to be a net positive or net negative on defense, I think, is a real question. But even last year, they were like a 12th or 13th in defense last season when it was like Jaren and nothing, you know? And so
Jaren and 10-day contracts.
Yeah, no, really. And so, I mean, that is something that is actually when I do my preseason stuff, I try to come up, you know, get a sense of the league and ultimately do a prediction column. That is the thing I actually do. I try to rank the teams 1 through 30 offense and defense and think about that. And I mean, I think Grizzlies is maybe a top 5 defense. And then my question is, you know, how close can they get to the top 10 on offense? 3 years ago, they were top 5 offense the year they won 56 games. They were 30th last season. And so, like, you know, are they going to be 18th? Are they going to be 15th? Are they going to be 12th? Is there any chance they can crack the top 10? To me, that's a real question.
Chris, we really appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. When we come back, it's college football week 5. Jeff's Bets coming up next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Well, the NFL season is, let's be honest, we're into it now. Still time to get on board with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Get started with $200 in bonus. That's guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Go ahead and build a same-game parlay for Sunday, whatever team you love. For me, it's the Buffalo Bills. For you, it could be another team. Anyway, go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. FanDuel is, of course, official sports book partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older. Present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus bets expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 10-RECEIVE-RED-LINE. 1-800-889-9789. My guess, Jeff, is that at this point, most people could recite that disclaimer themselves. Don't you think most of our listeners at this point could just, as it rolls off the tongue, you know what's coming. Anyway, head over to FanDuel. Jeffrey, we got your bets. How was last week?
Jeff, we have real problems with what Baylor did trying to defend a Hail Mary. Let's see, what else was a disaster?
Oh, not really your fault.
The block.
It's a bad deal. You got a bad deal. You and Ed Scott, you both got a bad deal. That Baylor thing was a bad deal.
Yeah, that was a terrible deal. And then also when Georgia Tech got a field goal blocked and returned for a touchdown, like that's just a bad deal.
That's a bad deal.
An unbelievably massive swing.
Honestly, disrespectful. It's a new week. How's the week look? How big is our card today, Jeffrey?
Jeff, we also got massive problems with Cal. Like, you put up 400 yards of offense and you scored 9 points. Like, literally all they – oh, God. All right, Jeff, we got a tight 13-team card.
Oh, that's nifty. That's lucky. It's a lucky 13 card.
Shout out T-Swift. Jeff, we're starting with, I told you at the beginning of the show, the theme of the day would be let's get gross. Like, you know, sometimes you've got to get back to basics. You got to block, you got to tackle, and you got to run the football. We got Indiana and Maryland. But, Jeff, more importantly, we got weather up at Indiana and Maryland.
Yeah.
We've got rain, we've got winds, and we got a total of 51. People look at these two teams. They put up lots of points. Not tomorrow. It's going to be gross. The score is going to be gross. We're going under 51.
Indiana and Maryland under 51. Next.
Jeff, in our get back to basics, work on the fundamentals, one thing that we used to always do here, at our fund, we would find the teams that would cover and we'd ride them. And we'd ride them all the way.
This is back when we made money.
Correct. This is back when we made money.
I love those days.
Yes, I do too. It's been a tough market. The Ole Miss Rebels just cover. And I know there could be some rain. I think that's scaring people off. I have a little concerns that Kentucky might present some problems for Ole Miss's offensive line. But in reality, I don't think Kentucky can score. I think this is everyone's overvaluing what Kentucky did to Georgia when I think Georgia just played a terrible football game. The Rebels laying 15.5. I don't care. I'll lay it.
Ole Miss minus 15.5 over Kentucky. I do want to say two things, by the way. During the break, Paul from O'Call let me know, reminded me that it is Stripe the Vaught Day over there. And it could be a little, it could be just a little, what, 60 degrees, 70, whatever. It could be a good day to wear your collegiate colors, your hoodie or your quarter zip.
Yes, some outerwear.
Oh, call. Stripe the Vaught Day. I was also amused by Lane Kiffin, man after your own heart.
Mm-hmm.
I gather on the teleconference.
Yes.
Hugh Freeze commended Ole Miss for their NIL structure, the way that they do NIL. And Lane said that's really nice. He'll probably try to steal them, just like he tried to steal them.
Yeah, try to steal Walker Jones, who's in charge of the collective.
Oh, my God.
Also, Freeze was throwing that out there, he was basically trying to say what
he's
I did.
He was shading his own fans. Wasn't he shading Auburn? Wasn't he blaming?
No, but he was also trying to say, you know, what I did at Ole Miss was tougher.
Yeah, I did wonder what the motivation there was. Anyway, Ole Miss, minus 15.5. Over Kentucky on Stripe the Vaught Day. Next.
Jeff, if it ain't, you know, we're going to give them a second chance. I actually thought Baylor played a good football game.
Oh.
And
this is like a guy drops the ball and you throw it to him the next play.
Yeah, they were really trying to hammer it home. But BYU, everyone's seeing BYU. They have the big win against Kansas State, riding high. But, Jeff, this is just a spot that I love. We've got a ranked team in BYU as an underdog against Baylor. There's no reason you should take Baylor. Everyone's gonna sit there and go, "Give me the team with the number next to it."
Here's the thing: you've gone against BYU before this year, and it's bitten you in the butt.
Well, we're gonna try it again. Let's lay the Baylor, 3 with Baylor.
Baylor plus 3 over BYU. All right, next.
All right, Jeff, we got another weather game. Everybody sees Colorado. Man, Colorado's defense, they suck. Man, that defense is terrible, but man, that offense is fun. Well, UCF's got some dudes up front. They can't block. Colorado cannot block UCF. We're not touching the total, but I am telling you, we also got weather and we got winds. The total's at 62. Give me under 62.
Colorado, UCF, under 62. Okay, next.
Is anyone sure if Texas A&M's good?
I don't think people are sure.
Okay. With the exception of the first half against UAB, Arkansas has been a very good football team, minus the turnovers. But more importantly, I'm getting 6 points. Give me the Hogs. It's in Jerry's world against A&M. I'll take the 6.
Wow. How about that? Hogs would deserve that. That would be a good win for the Hogs. It's been a last year was a tough year. And Hogs plus 6. Over A&M.
Nine times out of ten, that game will cover.
9 times out of 10, they're going to cover. Next.
Jeff, we go to South Bend, Indiana. You can watch this one streaming live on The Cock. Notre Dame hosting Louisville. It's a revenge spot. I think everybody on the planet thinks Louisville plus 6.5 is free money. No, sir. Give me the Fighting Irish. The Irish, under Marcus Freeman, when they play their ACC schedule, 8-2 against the number. Give me the Irish.
Notre Dame minus 6.5 over Louisville. Next.
Jeff, at one point this was flirting with the highest point total, or beg your pardon, the highest point spread that we've seen in SEC history. The Texas Longhorns hosting Mississippi State. I don't want to touch the total, but how does Mississippi State score more than 10 points?
That would seem unlikely.
Yes, and I just think we've got weather here as well. We got rains and winds. I don't think Texas is going to push the issue. Give me under 61.5.
Texas and Mississippi State under 61.5. Next.
Jeff, as a native New Yorker, Syracuse and Palo Alto, California, not close, correct?
Well, culturally, almost identical.
Yeah, of course.
But geographically, they're definitely distant. Okay, and culturally, and weather, and okay, pretty much like
literally every possible thing you could think of.
Okay, you got everything. Okay. I'd say 180. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Okay, that was last Friday night. This Saturday, they go to Clemson. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
No chance. I'll lay the 22. Give me the Clemson Tigers.
Clemson minus 22 over Syracuse. A lot of orange in that game. Are you starting to believe in Clemson, or is it mostly believing
in
Georgia?
It's Clemson against Stanford. Beg your pardon.
I'm sorry. Clemson-Stanford.
Yes, but they played Syracuse last Friday. That's why I threw that out there.
I see. That's right, Irving. Clemson minus 22 over Stanford.
I believe we've also got weather at our next spot, which is Houston, Texas. Jeff, rather than try to chase my tail all year and try to get on the right side of Houston, because I have no idea what they are or are not, I know I got something that I love. Iowa State at Houston. The point spread is 16.5. The total's 43. Give me under 43. That game's going to get gross.
Iowa State, Houston, under 43. All right, next.
All right, Jeff, you said you wanted to play on Alabama, Georgia.
I do, yeah.
Give me the Dogs. The line's moving completely against me, but I love it because everyone keeps doing, Bama is a home dog. Bama's a home dog. You got to take Bama as a home dog. It ain't a dog anymore. It's a pick'em. Give me the Dogs.
Dogs over Alabama in a pick'em game. What's your theory here? Why do you like the Dogs?
So I don't think Alabama's offensive line has actually been tested so far, and Georgia is very much going to test them. I think we think Wisconsin, like, we think they have a good defensive line. They don't. And I think physically the DBs of Georgia are going to create some problems for Bama's wide receivers, who are young, very talented, but young. And then more importantly, I don't think Kirby is going to implement the same plan that he had last year against Milroe, which was he largely just tried to kind of spy him up and keep him in front. I think this year they're just going to heat him up. And when he gets under duress and pressure, he takes bad sacks. He's going to chunk it up. I just don't like the matchup. I don't trust Milroe having to go win a football game. And then on the other side, Alabama's DBs have gotten beat a lot this year, but no one's really been good enough to make them pay for it. I think Carson Beck's good enough. And then also,
you would take Carson Beck over Milroe 10 out of 10.
I'm taking him on Saturday, and then yes, if he played 9 more times, I would take him 9 times
for your franchise, for the Fighting Jets.
I would take him 9 more times after that. Also, I don't think Georgia has the heebie-jeebies against Alabama. I think Kirby had the heebie-jeebies against Saban.
All right, next. By the way, how important is this for Alabama in the postseason for Kalen DeBoer in the post Saban era? Is this like, can he win that? Can he lose this? And people, obviously, of course, people are going to be mad. But like, how important is this to him and to each of them? Honestly,
I think for him, it's the classic. You can bank some goodwill in the end, he's going to be judged by whatever they do in the postseason.
Well, that's the new dynamic, isn't it? Like, in the end, it's going to be judged by postseason. All right, next.
Jeff, we got Ohio State. Finally, they finished preseason play. They will be hosting Michigan State. I think this is where Ohio State tries to flex. They want to get a scoreboard game. I'll lay the 23.5.
Ohio State minus 23.5 over Michigan State. Next.
Jeff, our final game on the card. If you would allow me, please, I would like to read you some numbers. These
please,
numbers,
I love numbers.
These numbers are as follows. 14. 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
13.
Yeah.
And then we had, let's see, where I think this were 20, 21. Okay. And 21 was against, yes. So 14, 12, 13, 21. Those are Florida State's offensive scores. I'm not touching this total because SMU is still hungover from trying to celebrate a win against TCU, but I know what happens when you're hungover. You just try to get out of the game. Give me under 47, SMU, Florida State.
What's the line there?
6.5. I flirted with taking Florida State, but you can't trust them.
No, you can't take Florida State.
Because even last week when they won and covered, they shouldn't have.
Now, Jeffrey, speaking of numbers, you told me it was a 13-team card.
Uh-huh.
I only have 12 numbers.
One,
I only have 12
two,
games down
three,
here.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
I might have missed one.
Okay.
So here we go. I'll read them back to the people, and then you tell me what we missed. Indiana, Maryland, under 51.
Yep.
Ole Miss, minus 15.5 over Kentucky.
Yep.
Baylor, plus 3.
Okay, I figured out where we missed it. Let's go to Birmingham, Alabama. There's no reason to take this under, but we got Navy and UAB, 57. We've also got weather there. Give me the under.
Under 57. By the way, before I read the full card, Army wins again last night and beaten Temple. It really is, for Memphis, it's a problem because they play nobody. Like, in conference, they don't play Memphis. They don't play Tulane. They don't play South Florida. And they play UTSA at home.
And they play Navy, but it doesn't count.
First of all, it could literally be in the first year that we've got the Army Navy game in, you know, both of the members of the conference. It could very well be that they play and it doesn't count, and then they play in the conference championship game. Same two teams playing the conference championship game, which drives home why another reason why the hell you want to get out of this conference. But yeah, so you've got Army, and then if they waltz, and I'm not saying they will, they can flip up, obviously. And out of conference, they got Notre Dame, right? They got Notre Dame. They got another tough game too. Like, I can imagine them certainly winning games, but in conference, if they waltz to the conference championship game, you're going to need Navy now to lose twice. And again, the Army game doesn't count. So I do think for Memphis, that's a problem. And by the way, there was one point that Jason Smith made that I thought was really terrific, which was this. In all of this discussion that we've had over all of this realignment stuff, and when Ed Scott said, a lot of people think you got to go to be great, I think we have to be great to go, I really do think when he said that, he was referring to the fans. It was in that context. If you go back and listen to it, he was talking about a lot of our fans think, and then he was talking about, you know, people are canceling season tickets or whatnot. And Jason took that and put the spotlight totally on the teams themselves. And I think that is correct. We talk about Memphis as if it doesn't belong to be in this AAC. Too good for the AAC. Crap conference. What did John call it yesterday? Monkey something, right? Like, whatever. They have not been in the... Ryan Silverfield has never made it to the championship game of this monkey crap, whatever it's called, conference. And Penny has basically played second fiddle to Houston while Houston was here, and then to Florida Atlantic last year.
They did win the conference tournament once under Penny, but like, they haven't rolled through this.
No, I think you make the argument other than Kendrick and DeAndre's year, they have underperformed in league play every year.
So I mean, the truth of the matter is, and then you take this game against MTSU, like, I don't know how many people are going to show up, but I'll tell you this, a lot more would have shown up if the defense had shown up against Navy.
Hey,
you know, like, if this were an undefeated Memphis team coming off the Florida State win and then a Navy win, and you're looking still at a playoff as a real, you know, as we hope, we got a path to, like, in terms of being great to go, to me, the onus isn't on the fans who have overperformed, I think, as a fan base. It's on the two key franchises of that program, which have underperformed. And I think that's a fully appropriate way to look at it. I got to give the card real quick. Indiana, Maryland, under 51. Ole Miss, -15.5 over Kentucky. Baylor, +3 over BYU. Colorado, UCF, take the under. That's under 62. Arkansas, Go Hogs, +6 over A&M. Notre Dame, second-best fight song in the land, -6.5 over Louisville. Texas, Mississippi State, under 61.5. Clemson, -22. Go ahead and lay it over Stanford. Iowa State and Houston, under 43. Dogs in a pick 'em game over Alabama. Ohio State, -23.5 over Michigan State. SMU and FSU, yuck, go ahead and pick the under 47. And Navy, UAB, under 57. That wraps it up. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Anthony Sain will join the program with them. Blake Topmeyer joins us on Jeffrey Wright and Company Football Friday with Tim Murray. Also, it's Friday, so that means Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, buddy. Back on Monday for now. Work is done. Have a great weekend.